And welcome to the Rick House. Cyrus Farmer here, the Stomp the Tea podcast. Folks, first and foremost, Happy New Year. Welcome to 2025. What a year 2024 was, and what a year 2025 has a chance to be. So, congratulations to one and all. Let's go get it this year. I think it'll be a lot of fun. We have a lot of stuff to get into tonight. I want to tell you, we're going to do kind of a little wrap-up of a couple of things that I thought were really interesting about 2024. And we're also going to be running down my three favorite choices from the What Are You Drinking Tonight list from 2024. So that is going to be something I'm really looking forward to getting into. And of course, as always, we will start 2025 the way we ended 2024 with What Are You Drinking Tonight? A new edition tonight as well. So before we get into any of that, I, as is my wont, did want to talk a little bit about where we stand right now with the Eagles and Saquon Barkley. It was announced earlier that Saquon will not be playing in the game against the Giants. I believe Coach Sirianni is going to be sitting almost all his starters, not just Saquon Barkley. A little bit curious to me, you know, I think I said last week that if Saquon was within 110 yards of the Eric Dickerson record, then you have to probably play him and give him a chance to break that record. All that being said, I've always maintained that the Super Bowl and getting to the Super Bowl and winning the Super Bowl is the number one goal of not only any team, but especially the Philadelphia Eagles. So I can't cry. I'm not upset that he's not going to play. But I do think that with 101 yards away from the record, coach should probably give him a quarter. Definitely not more than a half to try to break the record. But again, first things first, let's get to the Super Bowl. Let's get to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl. That is the most important thing. I'm a little surprised, I have to be honest, that Saquon won't be playing because I thought that the Eagles would like to play Jalen Hurts if he is able to come back and compete after his concussion, if he clears the concussion protocol. Now, maybe Jalen is not going to clear the concussion protocol, or maybe they're going to be safe with him, him being Jalen Hurts, and not put him at risk before the playoffs. But I just think it would be really smart to get Jalen some reps and some snaps in live action before going into the playoffs. This would be his third game off, and the Eagles, locked in the two seed, are going to be playing next weekend, their first playoff game. Looks like they're probably going to be playing either the Rams or the Washington Commanders. They'll be playing the Packers or the Washington Commanders. Right now, it's currently, they're facing the Packers. I don't know. I just feel like you want to give him some reps instead of 3 weeks off. But, you know, what do I know? I'm not a coach in the NFL. I'm not a GM in the NFL. I can only give you my opinion. But I would love to see Jalen get a couple of snaps, even if it's just the first quarter, before facing whatever opponent the Eagles face in round one of the playoffs, wild card weekend. But maybe Jalen's not even going to be ready to play. And if that's the case, definitely don't play Jalen or anyone else. I have to say, it would have been nice and interesting to see Saquon take a run at that Eric Dickerson all-time record against his former team, the Giants, in the last game of the season. I know for a fact that he would have broken that record against the Giants. I don't care whether the Giants are playing hard or whether the Eagles are playing hard. Saquon would have been running hard. And I think he would have loved to break that record against the Giants. We'll never see that in all likelihood. But it would have been fun to watch. again, I can't cry about Saquon not playing because the most important thing is the championship. But it sure would have been fun to watch him against the Giants. Another thing I wanted to talk about before we get started with the show is, well, you have a monster game coming up on Sunday Night Football to end the 2024 regular season. Detroit Lions versus the Minnesota Vikings with the number one seed in the NFC on the line. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. What a big, big game. Look, the Lions are a little banged up right now. I shouldn't say a little banged up. The Lions are a lot banged up right now. They have all sorts of injuries, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You know, if for some reason the Lions don't end up winning the Super Bowl this year, they are going to really look back at what could have been, because I think the moment Aiden Hutchinson went down, and this sounds crazy, as good as that team is on both sides of the ball, but I think the moment Aiden Hutchinson went down, they lost an edge that could not be replaced. I mean, I think I said this before. I didn't expect Aiden Hutchinson to do much coming out of Michigan. I thought he'd be a good player, but I didn't think he was worthy of being the number two pick overall in the NFL draft the year he came out a couple years ago. But boy, was I wrong. I mean, he is such a force. Literally, I've said this before, but every time Detroit played on defense, about half the time, I'm just watching Hutchinson just to see him get off blocks, just to see how he's going to test the quarterback. He just was a tremendous player. Once again, we hope he comes back healthy. We hope he comes back as some semblance of his former self after the horrific injury that he suffered. But all that being said, when Hutchinson was in the lineup on that defense, I think Detroit had an edge that really could not be duplicated by anyone they were playing. I think Hutchinson is that great of a player. And with their offense and their running game and their passing game and Goff playing the way he's playing, I think if Hutchinson hadn't gone down, almost every other injury that the Lions have sustained to this point on defense, they could probably live with. But with Hutchinson being down, it may be too much. We will see, because I believe that the Minnesota Vikings are for real. Now, it's easy to doubt the Vikings. Don't get me wrong. It is very easy. And look, no one started talking about the Vikings until about 3 or 4 weeks ago. So we've taken them for granted forever. There's a reason, from my point of view, that the Vikings have been taken for granted. It's hard to believe in them. Sam Darnold has played great. He has so many weapons. Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, Hawkinson, the tight end, the running back, Aaron Jones, from formerly of Green Bay. That defense with Brian Flores. There are so many good things about what the Vikings are doing. But let's be honest. Haven't we all seen this before from the Minnesota Vikings? Now, you have to understand, I have followed the Vikings for a number of different years. I went to college. I went to Carleton College, which is in Northfield, Minnesota. So I've been aware of the Vikings for over 30 years. And I kind of followed what they do because I went to school there 4 years. You know, I was a part-time resident of the state of Minnesota. So, you know, you follow the local teams. In 1998, with Randall Cunningham and what I thought was a tremendous team, a team that literally should have won the Super Bowl, going away, didn't even get to the Super Bowl. Let's not forget about the Viking team with Case Keenum leading the way. I believe that was the Stephon Diggs Minneapolis Miracle. When they beat the Saints in that playoff game at the last second to win the game, only to not make it to the Super Bowl as well, with a quarterback named Case Keenum, who could forget a couple years ago, the Kirk Cousins-led Minnesota Vikings that won probably 11 or 12 one-score games. I mean, an NFL record, only to lose in the first round of the playoffs against the Daniel Jones-led New York Giants. So we've kind of seen this story before. Now there's Sam Darnold. Is Sam going to kind of break the streak of quarterbacks who were, let's say, on the rebound? And some quarterbacks, let's say Randall was on the rebound because he had some great years here in Philadelphia, although he never got to the Super Bowl. And quarterbacks who are kind of like never were, you know, Case Keenum, Kirk Cousins to a degree, and now Sam Darnold. Is he going to break the streak for the Minnesota Vikings of a team with a fantastic record that's led by a quarterback that has a, let's say, spotty track record historically? Can he break through not only to win the number one seed for the Vikings, but can he actually get the Vikings all the way to the Super Bowl? Experience helps. It's not the end-all be-all, but experience definitely helps. And it remains to be seen whether or not Sam Darnold and the rest of his team will be able to stand up to the pressure and the scrutiny that is going to be thrust upon them with this playoff season. But it should be a whale of a game. Ben Johnson versus Brian Flores, Aaron Glenn versus Kevin O'Connell, just strength on strength and weakness on strength and all of these things. It should be a whale of a game to watch. I'm really, really looking forward to seeing that game. And what a fantastic job by the NFL to end their 2024 regular season with that game, Detroit Lions versus the Minnesota Vikings. So there is that. Now, I have to tell you, I kind of got a kick when I was watching the highlights. I didn't see the tournament, but I did see the highlights of Charlie Woods getting a hole-in-one at the PNC Championships last week. You know, Tiger's reaction was fantastic. Charlie, you know, didn't see it go in the hole because of where they are in the tee box, but from the crowd reaction and, of course, television commentators there told him that it was actually a hole-in-one. It got me to thinking. I'm really looking forward, first and foremost, to seeing what Charlie does in it as an amateur. Apparently, he's a very, very good player. We've all heard about this, but let's see what he does in competition. I'm looking forward to seeing his amateur career, and obviously, we'll see what happens beyond that after the fact. But, you know, I've never, as you all know, I'm a lousy golfer, but I have never made a hole-in-one. I have actually come close on a couple of different occasions, believe it or not. Close being within 3 feet. Obviously, they were par threes. But that being said, additionally, I have never witnessed a hole-in-one. Folks, they're pretty rare when it comes right down to it. And I think I've gotten close. I've gotten to, I think, within, 4 inches? One of my playing partners was right on the edge of the cup, essentially, on a shot. But I've never witnessed a hole-in-one. I've never been in the clubhouse when someone else who was playing before or after me got a hole-in-one and bought drinks for the clubhouse. I mean, I've just never been a part of that. And that is my new goal for 2025, to be either a witness to or a participant in a hole-in-one for 2025. It's not a resolution. It is a 2025 goal. We'll see what happens. But I did want to talk to you about that. You guys let me know if you've ever been either witnessed a hole-in-one or been in a clubhouse when someone before or after you hit a hole-in-one. I'm interested. I think it's fairly rare occasion. It probably happens less than than most of us would think, especially golfers. I want to start asking that question to people that play golf, buddies that I know. All right. As always, folks, don't forget to like, don't forget to subscribe, do all the things that you would normally do to support any endeavor that you like. We are doing everything we can to get you the content week in, week out. And as you well know, we have an audio version of this podcast as well. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, TuneIn, I believe. There's all sorts of ways to get this podcast content to you outside of TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram and Threads as well, and X. So tell your friends, tell your enemies. We will be here as long as you are there. Now, let's get into the show. 2024. Folks, there are a lot of year-end reviews over the last few days, as is the case every year. What were the biggest news stories of 2024? What were the biggest movies of 2024? Who were the biggest celebrities of 2024? Now, one of the things I found of particular interest were some of the sports headlines for 2024. What were the biggest stories? Some of the things that get mentioned, obviously, are no-brainers. The Dodgers winning their World Series, defeating the Yankees. Simone Biles at the Olympics. Obviously, that was another big, big story. The Paris Olympics themselves, that was also very, very high on the list. Staying with that Olympic theme, the U.S. men's basketball team and Steph Curry's remarkable performance in the gold medal game at the end of that game. That was another moment. Some people mentioned the Chiefs going back-to-back when they defeated the 49ers in overtime in the Super Bowl. Even you hear a few votes and mentions of the Boston Celtics winning their 17th NBA title. As remarkable or unremarkable, dealer's choice, as that may have been. Obviously, we hear a lot of Caitlin Clark. People talk about Caitlin Clark and her run in the NCAAs and her debut in the WNBA. All big moments, all worthy of note, and all worthy of mentioning. But to me, the number one, and I'm biased because I play golf, but to me, the number one sports story of 2024 was Scottie Scheffler's 2024 season. Folks, you have to look at what Scottie Scheffler did and accomplished in 2024. It was one of the all-time seasons in the history of the sport. I got some stats for you. I want to tell you something. So in 2024, Scottie Scheffler played in 19 events. He made 19 cuts. What does that mean? It means that every event that he played, where there was a cut is when you have to be in the top 70 in ties or within 10 strokes of the lead after two rounds in order to play the subsequent two rounds. Most tournaments outside of LIV are four rounds on the PGA Tour. So he went 19 for 19. He had 16 top 10s, 17 top 25s, and seven wins out of 19 tournaments. Folks, that is a remarkable record. I mean, he won more than 30% of every single tournament he entered in the year of 2024. That is just very, very difficult to do and impressive. He was a FedEx Cup champion. He was number one on the money list. He won the gold medal in the Paris Olympics in epic fashion at a golf course I've been fortunate enough to play, Alstom, great course. And he also won the Masters for the second time. And he went back-to-back, winning the Players this year and last year, the Players Championship. I mean, it was just an epic all-time season. But I want to put Scottie's season, as great as it was, into context. You know, we talked last week about stats never lying, but sometimes they don't tell the whole story. So the number one total of wins in a PGA season, you know, since they started keeping stats in the modern era, I guess since 83 or whatever, Tiger and Vijay share the record for the most wins in one PGA season, and that's 9 wins, all right? Tiger also is in second place. He won 8 times in one season, twice. Now, Scottie, he won 7 times this season, which is tied for third for the most wins of all time on the PGA Tour. He shares that record, Scottie Scheffler, of 7 wins in a season, with, of course, Tiger, once again, and Tom Watson. But that just gives you a sense of how great Scheffler's season was this past year. I mean, he's up there, you know, with immortals, obviously. Now, obviously, the difference is Tiger also won 6 times in a season, twice. And he won 5 times in a season, 4 different occasions. But he's Tiger Woods. I mean, what do you want? Scottie's not supposed to be Tiger necessarily yet. But this past season was as dominant a season as we've seen since Tiger. Easily, easily, easily. So, Scottie Scheffler, congratulations to you. You are my pick for greatest sports moment of 2024 here at Stomp the Tee. Now, as we move on, I do want to get into a little review of some of the whiskeys that were part of our What Are You Drinking Tonight segment. It's a very popular segment, as you all know. And it is one that is not going anywhere. We are going to bring that to you week in, week out, regardless of whatever obstacles stand in our way. So obviously, we just started the podcast. I think we started in October. So it is a truncated year. But of the, 12, 13 episodes we did in 2024, I'm going to give you the top 3 whiskeys that I enjoyed the most. I think you will get a kick out of walking down memory lane. Now, folks, the number 3 whiskey that I enjoyed most in 2024 from the What Are You Drinking Tonight list? McFarland's Reserve Cask Strength. Folks, I'm as surprised as you are. I was surprised the day we had it on the show in What Are You Drinking Tonight. I got to tell you, I tasted all of these 3 finalists over the last week again. And I just really think pound for pound, this McFarland's Reserve Cask Strength is just... It's such a good value. I mean, pound for pound, it is a wonderful whiskey. I mean, it's a wonderful bourbon. It's just really, really well done. I put it on the same level as Elijah Craig. Again, it's the kind of label and the kind of name that you don't necessarily want to shout from the rooftops, but you have to be honest. If I'm putting it in my top 3, for the year 2024, I'm shouting it from the rooftops. Don't be embarrassed about buying McFarland's Reserve Cask Strength. Don't be ashamed to serve it to guests. It's a pretty good bourbon. It's really, really, and what is it? $35, $40 a bottle? It's a great, great bourbon. It's a great, great bourbon for that price. I'm surprised, but I got to be honest. I really was a fan. Number two, by the way, you'll find our reaction and our What Are You Drinking Tonight review of McFarland's Reserve Cask Strength. That was in episode 8 of last year. It was in the 8th episode of last year, 2024. So if you want to go back and hear what we said about them, said about that whiskey then, that bourbon then, you can go back to episode 8. It's at the end of that episode, and you can find it there. Now, the number two choice for whiskey of the year from the What Are You Drinking Tonight list is the Balcones Single Malt Whiskey. That was in episode 11, just 3 or 4 short weeks ago. Why does Balcones make the cut? Well, as I said in the episode, it is a meaty, rich, chocolatey bourbon. And, you know, it is such a high proof, but you don't taste the proof. What you do taste is the richness of this liquid. It's very good straight, whether it's neat or on ice. It is unbelievably versatile because you can put it in a highball, whiskey and soda. You can put it in a cocktail, old-fashioned. You can put it in eggnog, and it melds incredibly well with the sweetness of an eggnog. It has so much versatility. It's a higher proof bourbon. It's so well done. It is completely worth your time and effort. The Balcones Single Malt Whiskey. It's cask strength, but it is completely worth having a spot in your bar. Now, what was the number one choice for 2024 for Cyrus Farmer here at Stomp the Tea? Well, I don't know if this is surprising or not, but I will say it anyway. The number one choice was the debut episode 1 entry for What Are You Drinking Tonight? And that was the New Riff Single Barrel Strength. Folks, I got to tell you, this New Riff, I'm a big, big, big fan. And I don't really hide when I'm a fan of anything. You can tell, obviously. But New Riff, they just do a tremendous job. I mean, this is clean. It's higher proof. It doesn't drink spicy. It doesn't hurt you. In some ways, it's the polar opposite of the Balcones single malt. Now, I think in some ways what makes Balcones so rich is the barley, obviously. You don't have that with the new riff. It is literally, it's a higher proof bourbon, very clean, very sharp, literally one of the best drinks you're going to have. Neat or on ice, it is completely worth becoming a fan of, and I am, surprisingly or not, a fan of New Riff. So you should consider it. Now, folks, in this truncated version of the show tonight, we are at my favorite part of every show, where I get to ask you a question. So I will ask you right now. What are you drinking tonight? Well, I can tell you what I'm drinking. Tonight I am drinking, drum roll please. That's right, the Sir Davis Rye Whiskey by Beyonce. Folks, I'm going to give you some information about this, and I will tell you what I think about it. Let's start off with the basic fact. Sir Davis is distilled in Indiana, and it is finished, blended, and bottled by Davis Hoag Distilling Company in Houston, Texas. What does that mean? Well, for anyone who's followed this show, it's pretty obvious what that means. They are sourcing their whiskey from Indiana, probably from MGP. Who knows? Does it matter? No. It's just a statement of fact. Now, I got the bottle for $80. So it's $80 a bottle. It is 44% ABV, which is 88 proof. And it has a strange mash bill, because the mash bill on this, it's a rye whiskey. It's labeled as a rye. But the mash bill is 51% rye, 49% malted barley. Now, why so heavy on the malted barley, you might say? Well, apparently, Beyonce is a big fan of Japanese whiskey. This is, you know, the rumor around the globe. You know, Beyonce can't get enough of Japanese whiskey. So they wanted to craft a whiskey that kind of reflected her taste. And I have to tell you that before we get into what I think about it, this does not taste like a traditional rye at all. It tastes much more like a malted barley. It tastes like Japanese whiskey. So before we get into any further into that, I want to tell you that this Sir Davis, it is a partnership with Moët Hennessy. And they put one of their master blenders, Dr. Bill Lumsden, on the case with Beyonce to craft this whiskey and present it to the public. Now, the whiskey, obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, because you may not know. Sir Davis Whiskey is spelled W-H-I-S-K-Y. There is no E in the spelling of whiskey for Sir Davis Whiskey. And most people think that is because of Beyonce's professed love for Japanese whiskey, which follows the Scottish tradition of spelling whiskey without an E. It is named for Beyonce's grandfather, a man named Davis Hoag. Apparently he was a moonshiner. It's Beyonce's great-grandfather. My bad. Beyonce's great-grandfather, a man named Davis Hoag, who was a moonshiner, apparently, in Alabama. And he would hide bottles of his product in tree stumps for friends and neighbors to grab whenever they needed more hooch. Like any great whiskey, any great bourbon, a good story never hurts. So that is the story behind Sir Davis. Now, apparently it was in a number of tests, you'll see this all over the place, a number of blind tastings, where it was entered without knowledge of it being distilled, produced, made by Beyonce, in association with Beyonce, and won several awards, apparently. Which is fine. I mean, I think if I were Beyonce, I would submit it blind as well. You want to see what people think about the actual juice, not the name behind the juice. I got to tell you, the aroma, when you smell it, it's a very spicy aroma. It's striking how spicy it smells. You can smell the spiciness, you can smell the alcohol, and it's only 88 proof, but it comes to the nose very spicy. But it doesn't taste nearly as spicy as it smells. And if you put some water or you put some ice in it, I gotta tell you, it opens up the whiskey. It practically eliminates the spice altogether. It's very, very interesting. It's sweeter on ice than it is neat. when you put one cube in there, a couple of chips, however you decide to non-neat your whiskey, it literally becomes very sweet, yet it still remains savory taste-wise. It's surprisingly complex, a little funky, both in smell and taste, but it's like a great stinky cheese, like Taleggio or one of the other greats, Poisse, I guess. You can tell and you can taste the Japanese influence in the glass. I mean, with or without water, you can definitely taste more like a malted barley drink. Whiskey, I should say. Now, I got to tell you, this bottle, gorgeous. I mentioned this before. I have to find a way and find a use for well-crafted whiskey bottles. I mean, it seems like an absolute shame to throw this bottle away, but I mean, I'm not going to keep, you know, flavored olive oil bottles in my house with like 50 bottles of empty bottles of whiskey. I mean, you go through so much olive oil at a time, but it's a shame because it is a gorgeous, it's a beautiful, beautiful, well-crafted bottle. Again, maybe I'll find a way to make use of bottles moving forward. At some point, I have to find a way to craft those. But it is completely, completely flavorful. It is, again, complex in ways that I hadn't suspected. And to be honest, it's a pretty good whiskey. It really is. I wouldn't be against Beyonce putting out a good product. I wouldn't be for her putting out a good product. I'm just telling you, it's a pretty good product. I'm just got to be honest about it. It's pretty good. Sir Davis Whiskey, you should give it a shot. If you can find it. I wouldn't pay more than $80 a bottle. I think it goes for $90 in some places, $100 in some places. But $80 would be about the most I would pay for it. But it's completely worth trying, and it's a worthy addition to your bar. I have to see what I think about it as it continues to diminish over the next few days and or weeks. Anyway, that is the show for tonight, folks. We will be back at you next week, once again, with another episode of brand new content. As always, tell your friends, tell your enemies. Let us know what you think also. We have some things posted on social. You can reach us in a number of different ways. So never be afraid to reach out. We'll respond to you as quickly as we can. But until next week, as always, we will see you on the first tee. Cyrus Farmer, Stomp the Tee Podcast. We'll see you next week.